Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
And a good afternoon to you all, a happy new year, and wishing you a blessed feast of Mary, Mother of God. Brant Shanley here as we continue our walk through the Ave Maria in the Afternoon year in review. And we're taking some time today to reflect on what it means to be a follower of Jesus and what it means to be holy. And so we'll start off talking with a local priest. Some of you may know he's certainly well known for us here in Southeast Michigan. That is Father Jim Rolfe. He's the pastor of Immaculate Heart of Mary Parish in Lansing. And he is one of the most genuinely joyful people that I know. And it's because he is so in love with Jesus and he is so committed to being a disciple of Jesus. And he and his family have been through some very hard times personally, and he's going to be sharing that with us. Talking about how he has embraced both discipleship and suffering. Later on in this hour, we'll talk about the power of everyday holiness. Dr. Michael Bacolic is our guest. Christian sanctity is both closer and more beautiful than we think. From mothers taking their children to Mass to a simple bottle of holy water, the most precious things in life often have no price and incredible power. Michael Bacala joins us to talk about the simple electrifying truths of the Catholic faith. He's the author most recently of The Shock of Holiness, The Romance of Everyday Life, professor at Catholic University of America, and author of many other books, including Mary's Voice in the Gospel of John, and Be Good Bankers, The Economic Interpretation of Matthew's Gospel. He's the father of 15, married to the economist and social philosopher Catherine Bacolic, who's also the author of several excellent books. And we'll have his information linked for you in the Ave Maria in the Afternoon guest archives. A couple of other things to think about as we start off 2026. One is a book we talked about many times over the years. D.L. Hudson has published 365 Days of Catholic Wisdom. And he starts off day one, or, you know, just January 1, if you will, with a line from Jacques Maritain on forgetting wisdom. In his book On the Use of Philosophy, Three Essays, Maritain writes, quote, "A time will come when people will give up in practice those values about which they no longer have any intellectual conviction." These remarks apply to democracy in a particularly cogent way, for the foundations of a society of free men are essentially moral. There are a certain number of moral tenets about the dignity of the human person, human rights, human equality, freedom, law, mutual respect and tolerance, the unity of mankind, and the ideal of peace among men, on which democracy presupposes a common consent. Without a general, firm, and reasoned out conviction concerning such tenets, democracy cannot survive. Again, that's D.L. Hudson quoting from Jacques Maritain in his book, 365 Days of Catholic Wisdom. Something to reflect on in this new year. How can we use more wisdom in our own lives? Also, as I mentioned, it's of course the Feast of Mary, Mother of God. One of those titles that sometimes makes Protestants a little uncomfortable. The classic thing that Al would say when he was still a Protestant, and Marcus would say the same thing, is they think that Catholics just have no limit on where they will take the Marian doctrines. Another book I will recommend to you is Tim Staples' Behold Your Mother, A Biblical and Historical Defense of the Marian Doctrines. And he starts off chapter one, the greatest of all Marian titles, this idea of Mary as the Theotokos, as the God-bearer. How do we defend that if that is, quote-unquote, not in the Bible? Why does it all matter? One of the things that Tim writes in his introduction is, you know, a lot of Protestants and Catholics try to say, oh, let's just kind of agree to disagree on this, put Mary on the back burner, we all agree on Jesus, so it doesn't really matter. Well, I wish it were that simple, but it's not, because, you know, there's the line, it's attributed to Mother Teresa, even though she didn't actually say it, as far as I know, the, you know, no Mary, no Jesus, no Mary, no Jesus, spelling, the two different spellings of no. But really, if regardless of who said that, that is actually very true. And if we don't agree on Mary, we're not going to agree on Jesus. And the Catholics' love for Mary is sprouting from our love for Jesus. And that's why we have this Feast of Mary, Mother of God. We'll talk more about Mary later in the year. Let's talk about spirituality and suffering with Father Jim Rolfe. You're listening to the 2025 Ave Maria in the Afternoon Year in Review.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Father Jim Rolfe is a dynamic young priest in the Diocese of Lansing, and I was blessed to have met him some time ago. And I wanted very much to bring him on the program that he may share his pastoral wisdom with us. He's a man who has embraced the cross of Jesus Christ and yet radiates the joy of the Lord in a way that's palpable to his flock. Father, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today, Marcus?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. And I'm very grateful that you're joining us. Father, for our listeners who don't know who you are, I wonder if you could share a little bit about your background. But really what I'd like you to get into is that unique story of the call of the Lord that brought you into the priesthood.
Absolutely, yeah. And so my name's Father Jim Rolfe. I grew up in the Ann Arbor area and grew up in a great Catholic family. Parents very much disciples that we regularly went to masses on Sundays and prayed the rosary together as a family, fasted during Lent, all of those things. And I think maybe the most important thing, though, growing up was recognizing that I could really have a relationship with Jesus. That happened for me in middle school. I was blessed to be able to go on a youth camp. And just from a very young age, from middle school, recognized Jesus isn't just kind of like this idea out there or even just like a set of rules. The faith isn't just a set of rules that I need to follow. But beginning to recognize that Jesus is a real person that I can have a relationship with. And that was really the foundation for my vocation moving forward. And so it really wasn't until high school that I started feeling this tug towards the priesthood. And it was actually my senior year. I was trying to decide, what am I going to do with my life? Well, what do I want to do? What opportunities are there for me? And I'd spent a lot of time playing sports and really wanted to play college baseball. I had wanted to go to school and study business. That's what I kind of had a natural disposition for. And at the time, I was actually dating a girl as well. And so my plan was I was going to go to college, play baseball, study business, and then potentially marry this girl that I was dating. And my senior year in high school, all of that changed because there was this moment at Mass where the Lord just spoke into my heart. And the best way I can describe it is a thought that wasn't my own popped into my head. It was, Jim, you need to think about being a priest. And that call terrified me because I really thought that God was going to take all this away from me, that if I said yes to God, he was going to take away my dreams. He was going to take away these desires. I was going to be unfulfilled. I was going to be really not joyful anymore. And so, to be honest, I kind of ran from that call. It was a kind of terrifying time for me in that senior year of high school. And was able finally to just surrender. And I was actually reading through scriptures. I came across Matthew 11, 28 to 30. And it was like the Lord was speaking this directly to me. And he said, come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You will find rest for yourselves. And at that moment was just finally able to surrender. God, I'm going to give you this chance and I'm going to choose to say yes to you, whatever it is you're asking of me. And the amazing thing is that when we say yes to God, he doesn't take from us, but he actually gives us the deepest desires of our heart. And so I made a visit out to the seminary. It turns out that the seminary was like a dorm on a college campus. I was able to play baseball, that because it was a normal university, I double majored in business and in philosophy, that I was able to just developed these great friendships with so many people that I still keep in touch with today. And so what's amazing is that when we say yes to the Lord, he doesn't take away the desires of our hearts, but he brings fulfillment to those deepest desires because ultimately we were made for him.
And your response to this call has culminated in your priestly ministry, which has been truly fruitful. You've been engaged very heavily in the work of bringing the life of the Spirit to so many of the members of your flock. I'd like to invite you, if you would be so kind, to share about the struggles, especially the physical illnesses that you've gone through that so many of your flock know about. But it's a story of how Christ brings about tremendous good even out of the sufferings that you've gone through.
Oh, absolutely. And so, yeah, for many of those who don't know me, I'm 37 years old now. And so a year ago, I went through open heart surgery. And just the story behind this too, again, God is so good. He's so providential as a father. And this was certainly a cross to be embraced, but I had my youngest brother was born with a congenital heart defect. And so his heart, from the time he was born, there was something genetically wrong with it. And he was a miracle baby. He survived birth, and he needed two open heart surgeries through his life, one when he was 7 years old and one when he was 18 years old. And throughout his life, he would have never known that he had anything wrong. He lived a very normal life. But when he came out of surgery, when he was 18 years old, there ended up being complications, and he passed away from that surgery. And so that was an incredibly difficult time for us as a family. But it was amazing the way that the Lord provided for us in the valley of the shadow of death, that he walks right there with us, Jesus, the good shepherd. And so we never really thought anything of it. But because that was a genetic heart defect, we should have all probably been tested as well to see, do we have that same problem? Mm-hmm. And so my sister-in-law was pregnant with a baby, and she was in with her OB, and the OB, this was not her normal doctor. This wasn't someone she saw regularly. And the fact that my youngest brother had a congenital heart defect came up in the midst of their meeting. And this OB said, well, obviously your husband, my brother, their family must have been tested, right? Because if it's genetic, they could all have the same issue. And my sister-in-law said, no, I don't think they've done any of that testing. And the OB was really mortified and stopped the meeting and said, I'm going to make you text right now. Just tell them they all need to go get tested. And so I got this text message from my sister-in-law explaining what had just happened. And I ended up going in and getting tested. And the doctor said, you know, usually we did give you a kind of a wink and a nod, you're going to be okay, but you have something seriously wrong with your heart. And what they diagnosed it as is it's an aortic aneurysm. So my aorta, the top part of my heart where all of the blood flows through to go to the rest of your body, was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And they ended up saying, you know what, we really do need to go in and do open heart surgery to correct this. Otherwise, it's likely that aortic aneurysm could burst and you would die rapidly if that were to happen. And so what an amazing gift of God that I've had this my whole life then. It's a genetic problem. But as soon as that aneurysm started, the Lord directed my sister-in-law to this doctor, who she hadn't seen before, that this doctor had us go get tested, and that testing revealed the problem. And so I was able to go in for open heart surgery. And, you know, Marcus, my whole life, I've been somebody who's been pretty athletic. I played a lot of sports. In high school, I played baseball, basketball, football. In college, I played baseball and have stayed healthy, tried to keep working out. And so have really always been able to do more or less physically whatever I put my mind to. And going in for an open heart surgery was this incredibly humbling experience of waking up from a surgery where the goal the first day was just to be able to sit up, and just very humbling to recognize that my strength is not my hope. That if I put all of my hope in my own body or in my own physical abilities, that ultimately that will let me down. But it was a great time to be able then to rely on the Lord and on his strength and on his mercy, on his compassion, on his grace. And it really did. It gave me this much deeper conversion of my value or my effectiveness really doesn't rely on me and my own physical gifting, but is completely, this is a gift from the Lord. And I want to be able to receive the gift of his grace and then share that gift of grace with others. And the other thing that was so humbling about this was just beginning to recognize how much I'm loved and cared for. And not because like I'm a priest and I do good things, so other people need to love me and care for me. But in the midst of my weakness, in the midst of my struggles, in the midst of really my body failing me, there are so many people who were there for me to be able to support me, pray for me, to just simply be there for me. And so it was this very humbling experience in beginning to see the Father's love through that lens.
So, Father, we need to pause right there because the music is hitting. But continuing on the other side of the break, Father Jim Rolfe of the Diocese of Lansing joins us to talk about redemptive suffering and the love of the Father. I'm Marcus Peter.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio Travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
You're listening to the Ave Maria in the Afternoon, 2025 Year in Review.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Pete. I'm joined by Father Jim Rolfe, priest of the Diocese of Lansing. He grew up in Michigan. His family attended Christ the King Parish in Ann Arbor. And he has served as the school chaplain at Powers Catholic High School and is the pastor now of the Immaculate Heart of Mary Parish and School since 2022. Father, I want to ask that we can pick up where we had left off, because you began touching on a very beautiful but also very difficult part of the Christian walk. So many of our listeners right now are carrying crosses that they sometimes feel are unbearable. And in those situations, believing that God loves them or believing that he even cares enough to help them through it becomes an extremely challenging process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree so much, Marcus, that even in my time counseling people and walking people through, especially in the context of confession or spiritual direction, that so many of us believe that we are worth our action, that we're worth our success, and we're loved because of that. And having gone through this open heart surgery, it was a cross to bear. And it became this really poignant truth that I am not loved because of my physical strength, because of my physical abilities, because of what I can do, but very much I'm loved because I am a son of God, because he has chosen me for this ministry of priesthood. And so very much I'm loved because of who I am, not because of what I do. And, you know, for me, it was really good for me to spend time in the agony in the garden with Jesus and just to allow those truths that are present in the agony in the garden to be made manifest in me. And one of the very stark ones was me wanting to be like Peter, that Peter is willing to fight. He pulls out a sword and he strikes the high priest here because he's willing to fight for Jesus. But then Jesus says to him, put your sword back into its scabbard, that what I don't want you to do right now is fight for me. What I actually want you to do is suffer with me. And in that moment, in his weakness, Peter runs away. He's not strong enough in that moment, but he will be strong enough by the end of his life, where he goes to be crucified for love of Jesus, to be united with Jesus even in death. And so for me too, it was, I've been so willing my whole life, Jesus, I want to fight for you. I want to be out there on mission. I want to be preaching, but am I willing to actually just suffer with Jesus and to know that he's right there with me? And so for those of our listeners who are going through whether it's physical, emotional, spiritual crosses, to know that Jesus doesn't love you because you can beat this and you're stronger than this and you can do this on your own. But very much Jesus wants to meet you in that place of suffering and that cross and be intimately united with you in it, because he loves you for who you are, not because of what you're doing. And through this, he will bear fruit for the greater glory of God.
And the clinging on to that promise, clinging on to that realization, is perhaps one of the most challenging things to do in the heat of the battle. And yet, as you've mentioned, Father, it is the most powerful thing we can do.
Oh, and absolutely. And, you know, I tell a story sometimes. I used to golf quite a bit more. And my dad taught me how to golf. And as a young boy, he had just taught me how to chip, to keep my head down, my weight forward. And I had this chip while we were out playing golf, and I hit it to within about 6 inches of the hole. And I was jumping up and down. I was so joyful. And I said, "Dad, I think I've got this chipping thing down." And he just laughed because he knew, yes, Jim, that was a good chip, but there's going to be a lot more opportunities where you're going to try and fail, where you're going to try and succeed, where you're going to need to grow, because it's a process of daily being able to perform in that game. But our spiritual life is so much more than a game. But there's that same analogy that there are these moments where we succeed and we surrender and God is so present and I feel his grace. But there are other moments where I reach out and I grasp after control, or I reach out and I say, "God, my will be done in this moment." And the goal is moment by moment, day by day, over and over, I need to choose surrender. I need to choose to embrace those crosses and again, be united with Jesus. And that's something that I would encourage, something that I encourage myself to do, but encouraging our listeners that just to make that recommitment to surrender again to the Lord today, recognizing that he is working in your life in this moment.
And realizing that also helps us realize that we don't see the full picture. And undoubtedly, there are many people listening right now, Father, like you have. They're going through what I call their Job seasons, you know, a time when you're hit with a tremendous amount of things. And the temptation is to then go to God and start not even bargaining or reasoning, but just outright questioning, fist to heaven, what's going on? And the answer is we won't get satisfactory answers on this side of the veil.
Exactly. And, you know, going through this, I do think, and the answer to Job even, right? Can you simply believe that I am God and you are not? Mm. And I that's been so powerful for me as well, because I think you're absolutely right, Marcus, that in our humanity, we want the answers. We want to know exactly what's going on and why it's going on. And so often we don't get those answers in what we perceive to be a satisfactory way. So am I willing to recognize God is God and I am not? He does love me. He does have a good plan for me. And that good plan leads right through the cross. And so I need to choose over and over to embrace that cross. And, you know, I do love that scene from the movie The Passion, where Jesus actually is handed his cross and he actually embraces it. He rubs his cheek up against it. And one of the other criminals that's walking by is yelling, "You fool, why do you embrace your cross?" But Jesus knew that the cross is transformed into the tree of life. And I want to be able with all of my heart to come to that same conclusion, that I want in my humanity to cry out, "This is foolish. Why would I ever embrace this?" But because of my faith, I'm able to embrace the cross, knowing that it will bear fruit and be transformed into a tree of life for me and bear fruit for the glory of God.
And this whole reality, bearing fruit for the glory of God, is what every person who's in love with Jesus Christ desires, which goes back to what you were going through, Father. You had this heart, you still have this heart for evangelization, for the salvation of souls. You're gripped with that fire, you know, you're that man traveling with the Bible and with the sacraments going, "Listen, this is the way to eternal life." And yet, even someone like you, who's given his life to the gospel, couldn't escape the reality of the suffering of the cross.
Absolutely. And I almost think, and I would have very much said that there can be this mentality of almost like a prosperity gospel that, Jesus, look at all the good things I'm doing for you.
Right.
So you need to, make me healthy, right? You need to give me good health. You need to bless the work that I am about. And what's been amazing is just this deeper surrender of not saying I'm successful because I can do all of this on my own, but even in my weakness, Lord, you are my strength. And what an amazing witness we have in St. Paul, who was beaten, who was stoned, who was thrown in prison, who was shipwrecked, and yet he still did bear fruit for the glory of God, not because everything he did was successful according to the eyes of man, but because he has surrendered his whole life to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords in such a way that God was working even through those struggles, or especially through those struggles in his life.
Father, one thing that has marked your preaching, whenever I've heard you preach, is somehow you wind up touching on the fact that we have such an overt desire, even you mentioned this earlier, we have such an overt desire for control of our circumstances, our situation, our outcomes, our destiny. As a final exhortation to everyone listening right now, being children of the Father means letting go of that desire for control.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's very much in our human nature, our fallen human nature, just like Adam and Eve, right? Like, I can take this fruit. I can control what's going to happen. And that actually leads to a downfall. But it is, Jesus is the perfect model for us of complete and total surrender. Again, in the agony in the garden, Lord, Father, if it's possible, let this chalice pass from me, but not my will, but yours be done. And that is something that has so marked my priesthood, but especially in this last year, going through these physical struggles, is, Father, here's my will. I want things to be this way. I want worldly success, or I want this thing to happen. But I choose in this moment, not my will, but yours be done. And so just a final exhortation for our listeners, in whatever way you need to, just to be able to say, Lord, here's my heart. Here's my desires. And yet in all of this, not my will, but yours be done, Lord.
My guest has been Father Jim Rolfe of the Diocese of Lansing. I'm Marcus Pete.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
The Heart of the Interior Life, with Elizabeth Jangle.
In the fourth rule of St. Ignatius of Loyola's 14 Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, he describes several characteristics of spiritual desolation. Three of these include when a soul experiences a lack of confidence, is without hope, and is without love. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, "The lack experienced in spiritual desolation does not signify the loss of faith, hope, and love as abiding virtues in the heart of the baptized. What decreases is the conscious, felt experience of these three virtues. A lack of confidence may cause a soul to have doubts about their life of faith. A soul without hope may feel discouraged in their progress towards God. And a soul without love may experience a heart that feels cold and unable to sense God's love. The call in spiritual desolation is always to reject the desolating lies and to trust in a God who loves us."
For more information, visit avemariaradio.net.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. St. John the Apostle records the John chapter 6 Bread of Life discourse, in which Jesus states that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. Who better to understand John's writings and subsequent teachings than a disciple and student of John, St. Ignatius of Antioch? In his letter to the Smyrnians in 110 AD, Ignatius writes, "I have no taste for corruptible food, nor for the pleasures of this life. I desire the bread of God, which is the flesh of Jesus Christ. And for drink, I desire his blood, which is love incorruptible." The Catholic Church absolutely follows St. John and St. Ignatius in taking Jesus at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
You're listening to the Ave Maria in the Afternoon 2025 Year in Review.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm joined by someone whose work I've followed for a long time now. That's Dr. Michael Pakulik. He's no stranger to this program, and the blessing of being live at the EWTN Catholic Radio Conference 2025 is I get to meet people that are on the other side of the country sometimes, and Michael's here with us. This is the first time we're meeting in person. Michael, thank you so much for being here.
You know, Marcus, when I was on the Beltway coming here, I kept singing that refrain from Amazing Grace, "Through many toils, dangers, and snares." That's what it took me to get here.
and if any of you have driven in D.C., you'd know he's telling the truth. Oh gosh,
part of the romance of everyday life are adventures and quests, slaying dragons and whatnot. And I think driving on the Beltway is something like that.
So is that the modern version of training a man in knighthood? You know, the tests of valor?
It's definitely one of them.
And that brings us to our conversation. Michael has penned a recent book called The Shock of Holiness, Finding the Romance of Everyday Life. And lest we think that this is a book that is inaccessible, it's beautifully substantial, but it's so tremendously digestible. And what Michael has done is he's presented the different aspects of the truths of the faith in a very digestible, accessible manner, showing that in these everyday, what we think are more ordinary, transient things, there's tremendous supernatural beauty. And so, Michael, I want to begin there. Because in your line of work, one of the things that you do see is, especially in economics, politics, commerce, as you teach, it's so easy to become completely secularized in your paradigm. Mm. And here you are capturing the transcendental in the everyday.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. And it's, you know, it's something that all Christians are called to do, to be contemplatives in the midst of the world. And the interiority, which we're supposed to develop in prayer, I think it leads us to see things in ordinary life that are not visible otherwise.
And okay, so let's talk about exactly that, right? It is so easy for us to adopt this post-Enlightenment, you know, whatever you want to call the Enlightenment, post-Enlightenment, hyper-rationalistic view of the world, despite even those of us who are raised in the Christian faith. I want you to just speak to that.
I do think it takes a long time to overcome. In my own case, I would say probably 20 or 30 years. We begin by trying to see things with the eyes of faith. And there's this transforming of the mind that St. Paul talks about in Romans 12. Mm-hmm. Be transformed by the renewal of your mind so that you may show what the will of God is, what is good, acceptable, and perfect. Well, you have to see those things before you can show it, right? And this is a long process.
Yeah.
So I want to lead people in that direction through this book.
And I'm really glad you did. And I also want to throw this out. Again, we don't want to pretend that Michael's written a dissertation on metaphysics, yet it's a deeply metaphysical book.
Yeah.
You know, you're applying metaphysical categories. Just please share that with us.
Well, I think that the Eucharist is kind of the paradigm of all of this, isn't it? I mean, it's something that looks very plain to appearances.
Yeah.
It's bread or wine, the sensible species. But in reality, in faith, it is the body and blood, soul and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Right.
So that hiddenness, so well expressed, by the way, in this hymn of St. Thomas Aquinas, the Adore Devote, that hiddenness of this transcendentally great thing is kind of what we're up to as Christians. We're up to revealing that, noticing it, living in accordance with it.
Yeah.
Just think of the soul of a baby, the soul of an unborn child, right?
Right.
We have to give witness to the dignity of the human person and the unborn child, not visible to the secular mind, right?
You've touched on something truly profound, and I'd like to ask you to dive deeper, because what you're saying is, even if a person's not inducted into the metaphysics and the sacramental worldview, people have an understanding that science can point to something greater. So I know the secular narrative says not a child in the womb and clump of cells and whatnot, but apparently if the mother determines it's a child, it's a child, right? Mm-hmm. But for those people, mm-hmm. for this pregnancy that they determine as a child, every sign that they see is a sign of life that's greater than the sign.
Yes. Yes, that's right. So if the mother wants to keep her child, then she might look at an ultrasound of the child, and she sees a child's personality. She's
right.
She sees all kinds of things there, which are otherwise not visible. So, yeah, I think that's we have to be looking for these things. And a lot of the recovery of this in the life of Christ is a recovery of human perception,
right?
Which would come easier for pagans. So, for example, seeing providence in the seasons or in the beauty of a summer day, right? That comes naturally, so to speak, to a pagan. To the modern mind, it needs to be recaptured and reborn in us. And Christianity helps us to do that.
And so, in a lot of the areas that you write on, that you speak on, for example, just let's touch on politics mm-hmm. briefly. It's so easy for us to adopt an extremely myopic, partisan, rationalistic view of the political hierarchy. But adopting this view where all of a sudden everything has a touch of holiness mm. and a transcendent value, mm. the political hierarchy is meant to mirror a kind of heavenly governance hierarchy.
Well, we do need to be a little bit more detached, most of us, from from what's going on right now in Washington, D.C., or wars around the world. They're all serious and so on, yeah. but ultimately we're going to end up in heaven, I hope,
yeah.
and that's eternal. And so this world diminishes in significance in relationship to eternity. It has its role and so on, but we have to be detached from this world.
And that detachment, however, doesn't, again, you do this wonderful balance, because what you're also not saying is, therefore, don't engage in the created order.
Right, exactly. I mean, nobody neglected feeding the infant Jesus because of eternity.
And that's an eminently practical way of putting it. And so, the work of economics, for example, mm. it's not just about the bottom line. It's not just about the money in the bank account. It's about co-creating. There's a participation mm. in these principles that are greater than ourselves for the sake of fostering the common good.
Well, that's true. And family life has that character as well. And walking down the street. This is the great thing about being a Christian. I think that everything, and St. Paul calls it a fragrance or an odor. Right. Our Lord calls it salt, sometimes fire.
Right.
How I wish that fire would be enkindled on the earth. That's why I came. Right.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that should be dull for a Christian. Everything has a kind of transcendent character, even the Beltway. So the Beltway, Amazing Grace, just to take a personal example, is going through my mind, and it's St. Augustine's feast day today. Mm-hmm. So I was praying to him and asking his help in the various obligations I have coming up. And he's a great saint. He's the doctor of grace. He's in heaven. He is enjoying the beatific vision. He can hear our prayers. We can have a conversation with him,
right.
with this great saint. That's not pretending. That's not a fairy story. That's real.
We are surrounded, quite literally, by so great a cloud of witnesses.
That's right.
And so in this book, you know, you talk about how the crucifix is my love. And even touching on someone like John Vianney, which I greatly appreciated, we remember him for the wondrous miracles. We think of him as patron of saints. In a lot of ways, he was a simple, ordinary man.
Yes. Yeah, he wasn't learned. He was had difficulty with his Latin lessons. You know, he's kind of, as you say, very, very simple and humble. He spent a lot of hours in the confessional.
Yeah. My guest is Dr. Michael Pakulik. He is the author of The Shock of Holiness, Finding the Romance in Everyday Life, and therefore, falling in love with Christ through things in everyday life. Continuing on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Our world is filled with noise, work, screens, and endless demands. But Christ calls us to step away and listen. The nonprofit Revive app offers one-on-one virtual conversations with certified spiritual companions who help you deepen your relationship with God, discern His will, and find peace. If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we? Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3.
When we speak in the Catholic Church about the communion of the sacraments, what do we mean? According to the Catholic Catechism, the fruit of all the sacraments belongs to all the faithful. The sacraments are the sacred links uniting the faithful to one another and binding them to Jesus Christ, and above all, baptism, the gate by which we enter into the Church. The name communion can be applied to all the sacraments, for they unite us to God, but most especially to the Eucharist, as it is primarily the Eucharist that brings this communion about. In the communion of charisms, the Holy Spirit distributes special and diverse graces among the faithful of every rank in order to build up the church. The phrase, "they had everything in common," means that everything a true Christian has is to be regarded as a good possessed in common with everyone else. Thus, a Christian should be eager to share whenever, wherever, with whomever has a need. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
Most experts don't think like you do. Go to the computer. Type in child, self-esteem, search. Last time I looked, 31 million options. The experts believe self-esteem is the preeminent moral virtue. Type in child, humility, search. Crickets. Why? When was the last time you heard a secular expert talk about humility? But that's at the very core of the virtues we want to teach our children. Always remember one thing. When an expert tells you how to raise your child, you have to ask a question. Is this expert of the same worldview that I am? Does he or she value the same virtues I want to impart to my children?
You're listening to the 2025 Ave Maria in the Afternoon Year in Review.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter talking with Dr. Michael Pokulich. He recently authored this great book published by Ignatius Press, The Shock of Holiness. I want to greatly encourage all of you to procure a copy. This was an amazing read. It's a very edifying read. You come away from the book suddenly feeling like, gosh, everything I look at is hopeful. And so that's where I'd like to begin for this segment, Michael. And even just meeting you right now, I realize you're a man who exemplifies Christian hope. I'll be very honest. If I had to drive on the Beltway, my anxiety level would be through the roof. I don't think anyone watching my driving witness would say, there goes a Christian. But in your book, you showed that ordinary, everyday things become extraordinary encounters with, you know, what Aquinas tells us to do by not doing, you know, non nisi te domine, it becomes encounters with Christ.
Yes. Yeah. So, right. And you're a convert to Catholicism, mm-hmm. right? When I was an evangelical Protestant, I read a great book, and I'm not sure I remember the title. I think White was the author of the book. And the last chapter was something like Beyond Boredom. And his claim was that if you were a Christian, something you should never suffer would be boredom. That everything would always be interesting in a way, because you're a disciple of Christ. And I'm probably naturally a pessimist, to tell you the truth, and you know, kind of a somber personality. So if I appear hopeful to you, that's the work of the transforming work of grace of over years of being a Catholic. But I think that what I've discovered as a Catholic is that it really goes beyond not being bored. It's a kind of fascination, and I think I like to call it youthfulness. I think spiritual childhood for a Catholic, for a Christian, includes up to young adulthood. I mean, that's still not mature. So take all of human life, that's still not mature.
Right.
A teenager, a young person falling in love, and think of their hopefulness, the way they look at all things like they're new, like spring is new again, summer is new, every summer that they enjoy.
Right.
The way in which they intuitively enjoy things. You know, they can intuitively complain too, and we all complain, and we have things that hurt us and so on. But there's even there, there's a kind of proportion that they do tend to have. And it's this, I think this youthfulness is an essential trait of Christianity. Think of St. John Henry Newman. He's going to be declared a doctor of the church. Mm-hmm. He was still a kid when he was 80 years old. And he'd take out his violin and play the violin. He would joke. You could see it in his face.
Yeah.
In the images of him as kind of an old man, but he doesn't look like an old man. Or Mother Teresa is a great example of this.
Right.
She looked like a little girl, even there were so many wrinkles in her face, right? So I think that, you know, we're going to be resurrected, St. Thomas Aquinas says, at age 33. I think that youth is part of Christianity, and I think that makes it very attractive. And so that's one of the things I'm trying to impart.
Well, I appreciate it. In one of your chapters, you talk about St. Thomas Aquinas having penned the Summa. Now, you and I are both lovers of Thomas, and mm-hmm. so we read his works.
Yes.
And I fall into the trap, I guess, given my line of work, but also just the force of bad habits of my propensities. I love the high thinkers of the church, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. And so in my mind, that's some of the greatest things to aspire to. Mm. And then this guy sees Jesus I'll let you tell that part of the story. So Jesus reveals himself to Thomas, and I'll let you take it away from there.
Well, if I'm understanding what the story correctly, it's he saw his entire life as just straw. That's yep. what he commented, and after that he stopped writing.
Stop writing.
Somebody who wrote, I calculated 8,000 words a day on average, which was a small book every week.
Yep.
Just stop writing altogether. It's actually kind of interesting that he wrote it all. And I'll put it this way. I just finished a book. It's under review now at a press on his prayer before study.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And in his
prayer...
But
you wrote a book on the prayer.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's so fascinating. I argue that he wrote it when he's 23 years old as a student under Albert in the Studium in Cologne.
Okay.
He was hearing Albert lecture on the divine names of Dionysius. So that's my thesis in this book. But he was so aware of the hierarchy of angels, and he believed that there were more angels created than human souls that were ever created.
Mm-hmm.
So billions and billions of angels. And they form a hierarchy, and every angel higher in that hierarchy is more intelligent than the one below.
Right.
So he's at the very bottom of this. Right. So it would be fairly understandable to say, I'm so far at the bottom, like, why even try?
Right.
And yet, I think all of his writing was a tremendous exercise in humility. I can't understand this very well compared with the very first angel that's above me. Nonetheless, I'm going to try my best to say what I can.
That's a brilliant insight.
Here we are with AI, and we say, maybe this chatbot's going to be smarter than a human being. But Thomas Aquinas began every morning thinking that there were a billion intelligences. Higher and smarter than he was.
Yep. And he got up and went to work anyways.
I know, exactly.
And what
it's like, you could be, take anything you want, the worst violinist, the worst golfer, the worst horticulturalist, and nonetheless, you still go at it.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. And you go at it knowing that I mean, okay, we do that even at the natural level, you know? Mm. Like, I'm never going to be a rock star bassist, but I play the bass anyways. I enjoy playing the bass.
That's right.
And
that's Thomas Aquinas, right? We think of him as a supreme intellect, but for him, it's kind of like anything worth doing is worth doing badly.
And so when he's given this revelation of heaven, this small snippet of heaven, he suddenly sees what he's always known.
Yes.
And what does he do? He stops writing.
He stops writing at that point.
But those powerful words that he spoke.
But that's also, that's a kind of martyrdom. We don't call him a martyr, but that's a kind of martyrdom. It's like death of his authorial self, too. To witness to the transcendence, the beauty of God.
Right. And what should terrify us is no one has ever written about the beatific vision in such crystalline clarity like Aquinas ever did.
Yes.
And for him to say, all that I've written is naught but straw.
Yes.
I mean,
right.
Even if I wrote 1,000 books in this lifetime,
yes.
It's not going to compare.
Exactly.
And so then Jesus asks, ask of me anything and I shall grant it to you, and his response.
Well, okay, so my essay is on how that's usually not translated correctly.
Oh, okay.
So I went back to the original Latin and construed it what I thought was correctly. So logically, there's a distinction between a sufficient condition and a necessary condition.
Okay.
So it's usually construed as saying a sufficient condition. All that I want is you, Lord. But I think what it really means is, I don't want anything without you. You have to be part of whatever you give me. I think that's what it really means.
So as opposed to non nisi te domine, it's domine,
yes.
Non nisi te.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you have to go back and read that again, Marcus. That's what I'm arguing for in that
essay. Yeah.
That it's typically misconstrued. It's actually not, you can't construe it that way in Latin. But anyway.
Because I noticed you did that, and I noticed, I saw the argument you were trying to make, but the version I had memorized is non nisi te domine, and I'll have nothing but you, Lord. And all he wants is Jesus. But no, he's saying, nothing apart from you.
Yes.
And so then you go back to these ordinary things, and you realize even the donut I'm having, the bagel I'm having this morning, all of these things, I'm gluten free, I don't even know why I gave you that. All of these things,
I love donuts.
I'd want nothing apart from you, O Lord.
And that that's another way of getting at the shock of holiness, I think. Right.
So
what would be boring if Jesus was by your side, right?
So, but what you're effectively saying also is there's literally nothing a Catholic can't do that wouldn't be, in that sense, truly exciting because it's been touched by the hand of God.
Except sin, which repels God, right? So
right.
That's why you might even say that's why sin is sin, because God can't be present there.
Right. So I want nothing apart from you, God, because... It's an exercise in the virtue of the fear of the Lord. I don't want to ever be in a realm where something I'm doing offends the presence of the Almighty. Going back to the Eucharist as how you started, that ordinary created substance can be taken by the hand of the Almighty God and elevated so that the substance changes while the accidents remain the same.
Yes. Right.
And that is meant to be a foretaste of heaven for us.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It is.
Just close that out for us, that we ought not ever take that for granted.
Well, once a very holy person said to me that if you have a very frustrating day, like everything seems to go wrong, but if you went to daily Mass, you can be very happy that you had a great day. And... to be honest, I was thinking about that also on the Beltway trip, because I had a lot of writing to do this morning, and I was not very successful in advancing any of the writing I had to do. I was very, 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 very frustrated. But then this saying came back to me. I had gone to Mass. I had said my prayers. It's a great day. It's a great day.
So the Catholic can go to bed at night knowing, I saw the Lord in worship, I've done my prayers, and so I've communed with my Lord.
Yeah.
They couldn't get any better.
Yeah.
Right. My guest has been Dr. Michael Pakulik. And as brilliant as his work is, the simple wisdom there is that God our Lord has touched every facet of human experience. And because of that, it is beautiful. Procure a copy of his book, The Shock of Holiness, published by Ignatius Press. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.